Good afternoon. We have one case before this panel, and Judge Nygaard is with us via audio. So if you hear a voice, it will be his. Urgent v. United States, number 16-1765, Mr. Coliani and Ms. Kersvang?
Kersvang,
okay. Whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Vince Coliani, Jr.
You just go ahead.
On behalf of
Appellant Ruby Urgent.
Do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
I would like to, Your Honor, reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if that's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're ready.
This case involves a single issue decided by the District Court on summary judgment, and that is whether Ruby Urgent is an employer within the meaning of Title VII.
You mean whether she's an employee?
An employee within the meaning of Title VII. The District Court said...
And you're contending that she's an employee of the United States Marshal Service, is that correct?
We're contending that she's an employee of the United States Marshal Service, even though she formally applied with the court security contractor, MVM.
Mm-hmm. Was there a case expressly held that the power to hire constitutes the decisive factor in determining employment?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Can you point to any case that says the power to hire is the decisive factor in whether someone is employed or duly employed?
No, Your Honor, I cannot.
You have a multi-factor test in any case.
Correct. We have a multi-factor test under Darden that is used to determine whether an entity is an employer of an employee, entities or employers of employees. The Darden test sets forth numerous factors. And there are three core factors: who paid the employee, who had the power to hire and fire her, and who controlled the daily employment activities of the employee. Here we have a situation where the U.S. Marshals Service clearly had the power to hire Ms. Urgent. They reviewed her application for employment, decided that she was too late in providing certain materials to them, and disqualified her from...
Would it be more accurate to say they didn't hire or fire her? They really had a veto power as to whether or not a contractor wanted to hire her.
Your Honor, I would... They had not only a veto power, but actually the power to determine who, in fact, is hired. If we look beyond Ms. Urgent...
Well,
they have a veto power.
Is that a veto power over the people that are actually the employer?
Right. They have a veto power. In other words, no one can get hired if the U.S. Marshal Service says
you
can't get hired.
Well, then why does that make you automatically, if you have veto power, an employee of the person with the veto power?
Your Honor, I believe if you have veto power, you essentially have the power to hire and fire that particular individual. And the Marshal Service has gone beyond that here. They have said not only do they have veto power or the power to say no to an applicant, to the court security officer contractor, they also have the power to select who may be hired if there are multiple applicants that are qualified for the same position. The U.S. Marshal Service actually has the power to select the particular individual for hiring. So I think that goes beyond veto power.
Working backwards, if you have the three most important of the numerous Darden factors, it looks like perhaps you could make a good argument that the power to hire is that with the Marshal Service. But the payment comes from MVM, right? Does it not?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
And the control of daily activities comes from MVM?
The control of daily activities, for the most part, comes from MVM, although the Marshal Service has the power on an annual basis to review the employment status of the particular employee and to determine whether they are fit or unfit to continue their employment. And that's the Joint Appendix number 141. There's a document that describes that oversight that the Marshal Service has. So there's a continuing duty or responsibility or, if you will, the Marshal Service has taken the duty.
Well, so your argument seems to undercut a broad range of employment contracts where contractors hire people and they are subject, the contractor, by reason of the employment overview, by the person that the contractor has been hired by.
Sure.
And that's, why is that basically what you have here? You have a situation where the it's very easy to see that as a veto power, and you have a number of employment contracts in the everyday commercial world where they want to make sure that their contractor adheres to certain principles, and they want to have an overview of what the contractor is doing. They don't want to be an employer of a contractor's employee, so.
That's correct, and that's a very fact-specific inquiry where you look at the contractor or the owner or the hire of the contractor to determine how much control they have over the employee. Under the Darden test, that same test is applied. However, I would argue, Your Honor, we have argued in our briefs that when you have the power to hire and fire a particular employee,
well, you're making the definitive power, the test as to hiring and firing. But the case law, especially in commercial litigation, does not make that makes it an important factor, hire and fire. But it does not make it the definitive factor, because the multiple test is well beyond that. And it employs a lot of other factors as to who pays and whose supervision they're under while they work. And they're not government employees if you employ those multi-factors, are they?
You are. No, but I would argue that the power to hire and fire is dispositive.
You're taking a very narrow step there, because
if you have the power to hire and fire, you are an employer.
Well, except that the cases seen in commercial litigation, if an employer can oversee what a contractor is doing and say, we don't want this particular employee of yours to be doing the work that we're contracting you for, because he's indignant, he's not, he doesn't do a good job, and so forth. You're asking us to undermine all those multi-factor tests. If you're taking a stand that hire and fire is the answer to the whole question.
Your Honor, I think in a situation where you have an existing employment relationship, we don't have one here. If you have an existing employment relationship and there's no power to hire and fire, another entity pays the contract, pays the employee, then courts would look at the numerous factors you just enunciated to determine whether there's sufficient control.
These are the most important factors. Let me separate hire and fire, by the way, which is the second of the three most important. Hire may be, because of the involvement of the Marshal Service, the case. But it's, who gets the fire here? Let's say this person is hired and her wages are paid by MVM, and for the most part her daily activities are controlled by MVM. Something happens and they wish to terminate her. Who makes that decision? Okay.
Clearly, Your Honor, and the record's not entirely clear from this, but we do know that the Marshal Service has the power to fire if they deem that the CSO somehow inadequate or no longer qualified to fulfill the responsibilities of that position.
Can MVM also fire?
I don't think that's clear from the record. I assume that they would also have the authority to fire as well. But the record, we know at the very least that the Marshal Service has the power to fire.
You know, you're swimming uphill a little bit. In the Third Circuit, we got this Wilson opinion by Jeff Bartels. Opinion, which true dealt with rehabilitation, I think. Yeah, rehabilitation. But it clearly says that in that case, there's no employment by the Marshal Service in that case, and the facts are very similar to your case.
Your Honor, I'm not sure I'm with that case. We cited numerous cases under the Rehabilitation Act involving facts virtually identical to the facts here, where the courts have held, district courts have held, that under the Rehabilitation Act, the Marshal Service is an employer of an employee where they exercise the power to hire and fire court security officers.
You're not familiar with Wilson versus WV case at all?
I'm not, Your Honor.
All right, sir.
There is one case that Judge Bartle cited, which involved a federal contractor who had refused to grant a security clearance to a particular employee of a contractor, and I believe that case is easily distinguishable. Not granting a security clearance for certain types of conduct that the employer may have been, employee may have been engaged in, is far different than having the power to hire or fire an employee. So I believe that case is distinguishable. And again, we've cited cases under the Rehabilitation Act where they've consistently held that the federal government is a joint employer or co-employer of a CSO where there has been the power to hire and fire. And the rationale for that is the federal government should not be allowed to hide behind a contract if it's going to exercise the power to fire a particular person.
Well, we'll hear from Ms. Gerswang, and we'll get you right back.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Dana Gerswang for the United States. The plaintiff failed to exhaust this theory that the Marshal Service denied a second extension of time to complete her background check when she affirmatively and repeatedly disclaimed it during the EEO process.
Can I just ask an analytical question? Why did the district court skip the Darden factor analysis?
Yeah, in district court, plaintiff didn't make an argument under the Darden factors. That came up really in the reply brief and in our brief.
But that seems to be what you're supposed to look to. And there's no analysis of that, no mention of it at all.
Yeah, so the district court talks about waivers of sovereign immunity need to be read narrowly, and the language of the statute doesn't get you there. But even looking at the Darden factors, what the court is looking at, of course, is who hired, fired, paid, and controlled daily activities. And plaintiff alleged that the Marshal Service hired, trained, supervised, and paid the CSOs. That really settles that question. It can't be that the government is an employer every time they set out minimum.
But there's a way to go about doing the analysis. What I can't figure out is why the way you're supposed to analyze this wasn't even dealt with.
Your Honor, plaintiff's theory below and in the opening brief in this court was that there should be a different test for failure to hire cases, and that's contrary to the text of the statute, as the district court pointed out. It simply wouldn't make sense for somebody to be...
But isn't it normally that you would apply the factors for this particular statute?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And under the Darden factors and what's in their complaint, we prevail.
So if the answer is absolutely, then not considering the Darden factors, are you asking us to consider them, or do you think we should remand to the district court?
I think that you can consider them. I also, plaintiff did not exhaust this argument when she scratched the box for reprisal out, told the EEO officer
to
stay.
During the investigation, she changed that. She wasn't sure what reprisal meant, and she changed it to retaliation.
Well, no, Your Honor, she didn't. And the final agency decision confirmed that says...
You were on notice, ultimately, that she was making a retaliation claim because of whatever relationship it was that she had with Ms. Finch, I should say.
No, we weren't, Your Honor. She talked about her relationship with Ms. Finch, but not about retaliation. And you can see in the final agency decision, the decision maker was kind of scratching his head. He says, she says it's because she lived with Finch, but that wouldn't be a basis for a Title VII claim. Title VII covers, you know, race, color, religion, sexual orientation.
Did the district court hold that retaliation is not in play because it wasn't played properly?
No, the district court didn't reach the exhaustion, but that's a separate threshold basis on which
the district court did reach the retaliation issue, right?
Yes.
Did you brief the retaliation issue?
What do you mean by the... I'm sorry, I'm not sure what the court means by retaliation issue.
She had a claim against the United States Marshal Service. Among the claims that she had was that she was not hired because it was retaliatory for her relationship with Ms. Finch, who previously had been employed by the Marshal Service, correct?
Correct. And the district court said that that was not within the within the statute that the government was not the employer.
I got it. And you briefed that, did you not?
Absolutely. If this, I didn't personally brief it, but the government briefed it.
Correct.
If the district court's decision doesn't go into, doesn't address this in the way that, that the court thinks should be done, this court can affirm on any ground supported by the record, and both the exhaustion and the Darden factors give ample space to do that. I mean, she alleged in her complaint that the contractor hires, trains, supervises, and pays the court security officers. The district court looked at that, looked at her, both her contract that she signed, or the thing that she signed, and also her testimony that she didn't think that she was going to work for the Marshal Service, which, while not determinative, is, this court has said, very probative information, and looking at that, said she hasn't said that she's going to be an employee of the Marshal Service. Now, you know, had she pushed a joint, had she pressed a joint employer theory below under Darden, I'm sure the district court would have addressed that, but that's not what she did.
Well, yeah, but you were on notice that she claimed that she was an employee of the Marshal Service, and although some misstatement as to what the relationship is with her former roommate, it's fair to say you were on notice of all these things, were you not? And the district judge never really took the multi-factor test into consideration in writing up the district court's conclusion.
It's true that the district court didn't take this into take the Darden test into consideration, but this is an easy case under the Darden test because of her allegations here about who hired, trained, supervised, and paid the court security officers. To find that the government is the employer under this circumstance would make us the employer of every contractor when we set out minimum criteria for contractors.
Well, there's an awful lot of government contracts where the government doesn't give the ultimate opinion as to who the employees of the contractor are. And the ultimate test of employment, the most important test, is the ability to hire and fire. And they have the right to even hire, or they can discharge this person. Does that make your position rather weak before us?
No, Your Honor. I'd like to separate this out into two points. One is the most important factor, and the other is what we did in terms of hiring. The only decision we made here was not to grant a second extension of time to complete the background check. We didn't decide the merits of her application. If we had, we might have considered the fact that she had negative references, but that's not what happened here.
Well, that's sort of weak, though. Yeah, I mean, the excuse you gave for that is a little bit very, very suspect, to say the least, insofar as giving her enough time or additional time because you had to do it right away, and then you didn't do anything right away in the first place. So it sort of undermines your position that it's her fault that it wasn't resolved in her favor. When, you know, you said this had to be done right away, and you had no one to hire right away.
So there was somebody else going through the background process at the same time. That person turned down the job, then we had to go back to the drawing board. And what we said is that we didn't think she was cooperating with the investigation, and that's why the person who made the decision thought that there was a delay. But we don't get to that until she's made out a prima facie case, and there are a lot of barriers here to making out a prima facie case. This is a case in which she has to bring forward evidence raising an inference of retaliation as the likely reason, and she's utterly failed to do that. We're talking about something that happened 5 years earlier with a different employer and somebody who's temporarily staying with her. That doesn't meet the Thompson criteria.
Well, the question is whether or not there's a jury question here as to how close the relationship was sufficient that an employment action might well have dissuaded a reasonable worker from making or supporting a charge of discrimination. And, I mean, is that for a legal question, or is that something that should go to trial and a jury resolve that question?
No, Your Honor, it shouldn't go to trial because she hasn't alleged the basic facts in terms of who controlled hiring. She didn't exhaust her administrative remedies.
No, I'm talking about the person that she lived with and so forth, and she claims there was that relationship. That's another issue of the case, but as with the employment relationship, as to the multi-factor there, Isn't that all for a jury to determine whether this factor overshadowed everything else, whether the multi-factor test was applied correctly? That might be a question of law. I don't know, but there's questions of fact here. That should the jury resolve as to the closeness of these and whether it was appropriate for a jury to find that there was a retaliation claim here.
We're at summary judgment, and there is nothing in the record supporting that the people who made this decision knew how close they were. If you compare to Thompson, there the court said that the fiancé was a grieved person because they worked for the same employer, and hurting him was the unlawful act by which the employer punished her. There is nothing in our summary judgment record from which you can draw that
conclusion. Well, there's a lot there that a plaintiff could say that your position is a pretext, the reason of the facts that exist here in this case. You may not agree with it. I may not agree with it. But is that a jury question, whether or not what you're saying, the excuses you're giving, are pretextual for your real intent that you don't care for her prior roommate?
Your Honor, we don't get to pretext and the questions of fact in this case because we don't have the basic requirements for a prima facie case of retaliation. This isn't a Thompson case. This isn't someplace where we have the same employer who was doing something to hurt plaintiff because they wanted to hurt Finch. There's nothing in the record that the people at the Marshal Service who made this decision even knew that the roommate, the friend, had engaged in any protected activity.
Isn't that a jury statement just made, though? Aren't you just made a statement that a jury might consider and buy? But is that a statement you can make to an appellate court? When there's evidence that on the other side, I'm not saying it's the strongest evidence, but there's evidence that what you're saying is not the real reason why you didn't hire her.
We're at summary judgment, and there is no evidence contradicting the statements, the sworn statements in the record of the Marshal Service employees who said that they did not know. I was just going to talk about exhaustion, which is certainly a threshold issue, which would not go to the jury. She checked the box for reprisal, but then she scratched it out.
We've talked about that, and I, for one, am not buying it. But the problems you have is that the court didn't consider the Darden factors. Now, the three main Darden factors, who pays, who hires and fires, who controls daily activities. On the hiring and the firing, didn't Kirby from the Marshal Service make a recommendation to Winfield, who made a recommendation to Bradshaw?
What Kirby did was the background investigation. So all the Marshal Service is doing here is seeing if somebody meets the minimum criteria for service.
Who does Winfield work for?
Winfield he works for the Marshal Service.
And who does Bradshaw work for?
And Bradshaw also works for the Marshal Service. So
Kirby, Winfield, and Marshall seem like they're making the decision as to who gets hired.
No, Your Honor. If you look at what happened in this case, she applied to MVM, not the Marshal Service. MVM interviewed her. MVM evaluated her references. They determined her qualifications, and they could still hire her for another position had they wanted to. What the government did here was decide not to grant a second extension of time to complete the background check because they did not perceive that she was cooperating with the investigation.
And who made that decision, MVM or the Marshal Service?
The second extension of time was a decision made by the Marshal Service. What the Marshal Service is doing here is what the government always does in contracting cases, is saying, does this person meet the minimum criteria under the contract for the job?
So you've got to tell me what is the involvement in this scenario that you just talked about of Kirby, Winfield, and Bradshaw.
So Kirby was doing the background investigation. Deputy.
And she's a Marshal Service employee.
Yes, they are all three Marshal Service employees. But before the application comes to Kirby to do the background investigation, MVM has already. She's already applied to MVM, been interviewed by MVM, had MVM determine her references and her qualifications, and it's only after MVM puts her up as the person to fill this job, that the Marshal Service does the background investigation. They're determining if she meets the CSO contract standards. As the Tenth Circuit held in another government contracting case.
I just want facts for the moment. Kirby recommended to Bradshaw that the plaintiff here not be hired.
No. Kirby didn't make a recommendation one way or the other. Winfeld recommended
that. I thought he recommended that Urgent's application not be considered.
No. Deputy Winfeld recommended to Bradshaw that a second extension of time not be granted. That resulted in her being ineligible for the job.
And I thought Bradshaw, in turn, recommended removing Urgent's application from consideration when they forwarded the report to Urgent.
When they forwarded the report to the
Division of the United States Marshal Service.
Right. So because she hadn't completed the background investigation, I see that I'm out of time.
No, go ahead.
I just want to point out that the Tenth Circuit, the First Circuit, the D.C. Circuit have all held that this kind of decision about whether a contractor employee meets the minimum criteria for the job, passes a background investigation, does not make the government the employee, the employer of a contractor.
What you've got to explain to me, or I'm lost. It looks as if this went up the chain from Kirby to Winfield to Bradshaw, and it looks like there was a recommendation at some point that this person not be considered, this application not be considered. And ultimately, she was told by MVM that she just wasn't going to be hired. So it looks like the decision to hire was made by the Marshal Service.
The Marshal Service decision was the decision not to complete the background check. So Kirby was doing the background check, asked Winfeld if she could have...
But why not to complete the background check?
Because she was perceived by Winfeld as not cooperating in the investigation. Had they been looking at the merits of her application, they would have considered things like the fact that she had negative references from her past employers, but that's not what they were looking at. They were looking at the fact that they didn't have her police records and they perceived her as not having, Winfeld perceived her in particular as not having cooperated with the investigation. But again, this is only one of the Darden factors. And
one of the Darden factors that wasn't considered at all by the district court.
It's one of the Darden factors, and had they made an argument...
Were Darden factors considered by the district court?
No, Your Honor, and they did not argue in district court that this case should be decided under the Darden factors. They were arguing in district court that control over hiring was enough, regardless of whether or not she was an employee or would have been an employee if hired. And the district court rejected that, pointing out that these waivers of sovereign immunity have to be read narrowly. You're not an employee of the an applicant for employment with the United States if you wouldn't be an employee when you're hired.
Judge Nygaard, do you have any questions?
No, Judge Ambrose, you've asked all the ones that were on my mind.
All right. Thank you.
There are no further questions asked that the case be affirmed.
Okay.
The district court did not consider the Darden factors. The district court relied on the plain language of...
Did you ask the district court to consider the Darden factors?
We argued for arguing for the adoption of the Darden factors, that there was sufficient control over the hiring process to deem...
But there was no mention made to Judge Bartle then of whether the Darden factors should be considered.
There was no mention in the briefs specifically as to the Darden factors. However, there was reference to a control test.
If Darden's the way to go, why wasn't it mentioned in the briefs?
Your Honor, it should have been mentioned in the briefs, and it wasn't. And Darden is the test. You have made that clear.
Well, you didn't make it clear in the district court. It certainly didn't make it clear here. Your position in the district court, as was your position here, is their ability to veto the hiring and firing was dispositive.
Your Honor, our position here is that the Darden factors apply. There are three core factors, and the hiring and firing
that wasn't your position
is dispositive.
That was not your position in the district court, as I understand the briefing.
The positions in the district court was...
Your position was the ability of them to veto your hiring was dispositive.
That's correct.
That's why I read your brief to this court as well.
And this, Your Honor, I believe we've clarified in our reply brief that the Darden test does apply. There are three core factors. And
that's after you had the answering brief, but that was not your opening position or your position below.
The opening position did set forth the Darden test, but argued that the power to hire and fire should be dispositive in light of the fact that this is a failure to hire case. And I'm backing up from that.
Hire case. This is really a case of joint employment. Is that your position?
It's absolutely a case of joint employment. And the Darden test contemplates joint employers. It's not a test to determine who is the employer. Mm. It's a test to determine whether they are co-employers or joint employers. And we believe there is sufficient evidence in the record for a jury to find that Ms. Urgent was, in fact, an employee of the Marshal Service. They didn't not only have veto power, they would select from among the pool of available applicants if all were deemed qualified, and they had the power to fire as well. Judge Ambrose, you asked about who controlled the hiring process. The application was formally made with MVM. When the torch was passed to the Marshal Service, they had complete, absolute control over the hiring process. They're the ones that determined
Let's assume that's correct. They had complete 100% control over who was hired. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have a joint employer. You have to look at other factors.
Your Honor, I would argue that if you look at the three factors, the three core factors, we've got two of them. We've got the power to hire to fire, and we have some control over the...
But I thought you said that it looks like the majority of the control was by MVM. Sounds correct. What it comports what you said during your opening, that there was some control over their activities by the Marshal Service.
There was some control over the activities by the Marshal Service.
So if the payment is by MVM and there's some control, which sounds like less than 50%, it sounds like on the core factors, it probably tilts against you.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that if there's a power to hire and fire, that is sufficient for you to find that there was an employment relationship.
You can't find, but it's not dispositive. That's the point.
You're correct. It's not dispositive. I believe the Darden factors are applied. The litany of Darden factors that determine whether there's control of the day-to-day operations or the day-to-day work of the employee involves existing employment relationships. If there is a power to hire and fire, you don't need to go beyond that.
Your position is you're arguing against yourself. At one point, you say that the Darden factors apply, but then you say hire and fire is dispositive. That's not the Darden factors. Your problem in this case is that the only thing the Marshal Service does is to really have veto power as to who you hire and their ability to fire. They don't supervise. They don't administer. They don't overview the work that's being done. And for us to hold for you is, in effect, to make every time a contractor is overviewed by the government as to whether they'll go forward with employees, co-employees of the federal government. So that's a stretch, isn't it?
Your Honor, I don't think it's a stretch when the federal government is absolutely controlling the hiring process and making the decision.
An awful lot of contractors are going to have employees who are going to think they're federal employees. When the government can tell a contractor, get rid of employee XYZ because of whatever reason.
I think that's, if the federal government can tell a contractor to get rid of employee XYZ, I think
you think that's employee then is automatically a federal joint employee.
If the federal government has the power to fire them?
No, has a power, yes, has a right to tell a contractor, we don't have to work for us unless you get rid of this employee because he's obnoxious to people or whatever reason the government finds.
Well, I think it's a different, if you're asking whether they can ask a contractor not to work for the federal government or whether they tell the contractor to fire that person from their employ, I think those are different questions.
Well, they're telling the contractor, we can't give you this, we can't continue in this employment unless you get rid of this employee because he's persona non grata to do work for you when you're doing work for us.
If you're telling him to get rid of the employee, yes, I would argue that they're an employer of the federal government.
All right. Well, that's you want the whole nine yards. That's the problem here.
I think if we don't get the whole nine yards, if we just apply the three factors, there is sufficient control here under the Darden test to deem the Marshal Service an employer of Ms. Urgent.
Can we really say that Ms. Urgent's relationship with Finch was comparable to a fiancé or an in-law when she herself tried to minimize the relationship she had with that when she spoke with Kirby? She himself said there's no relationship there. It's insignificant. Yeah. Whatever, I forget the words, but she made very little of, and you wouldn't think of that, well, this is my in-law, or this is my... it was a passing acquaintance, but at best, made no allegation that this person was close to her in any way.
Your Honor, you're correct. She did minimize the relationship, but there is evidence in the record that they were close friends and that they were living together. And we believe that's sufficient to find that there was a close enough relationship that Ms. Finch would be dissuaded had she been aware, had she known that retaliatory action would be taken against Ms. Urgent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement and recess until 3 o'clock.